Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Neuro Experience Podcast. I'm Louisa. I'm the host. I have the honor of having Mike Mutzel on the podcast from High Intensity Health. I'm sure you've heard of him before. Mike is wildly popular in the health, fitness, and nutrition space, garnering tens of millions of views on his YouTube channel, which is actually where I first found out about Mike many years ago. He has actually been educating me from behind the screen. I'm blessed to have him on today's episode because Mike is one of those guys who not only educates, but he lives and breathes scientific education. He earned his Master of Science in Clinical Nutrition from the University of Bridgeport in 2015, and he also graduated from the Institute for Functional Medicines. He's a functional medicine consultant in the natural product industry, and he regularly conducts workshops for healthcare professionals, teaching leading-edge science in a concise format that can be utilized by progressive clinicians for the prevention of chronic disease. Today, Mike and I dig into one singular topic, and that is creatine, specifically creatine monohydrate. Now, I've spoken extensively on my Instagram about creatine. In fact, the creatine reels that I do garner the most amount of views. Why is that? My first thought is that there is a lot of misinformation when it comes to creatine. In 2023, we now have substantial evidence to know that creatine is not just good for your body, but also good for your brain. So over the next 30 minutes, Mike and I are going to discuss what is creatine, how is it used by the body, and does it diminish over time? What are the best practices for creatine, and why is it so good for your brain? I hope you enjoy today's episode, and if you do, please feel free to leave us a review, or better yet, screenshot this episode and put it in your story and tag Mike or myself. Without further delay, let's get into the episode. This episode is brought to you by Element, an electrolyte drink. I speak so fondly about hydration on this episode. This is a science-backed, neuro-backed podcast, meaning that everything we speak about is how you can have a better performing brain. And one of the best things that you can do for your brain and your overall performance is hydrate. Now, electrolytes are critically important for your brain. Electrolytes serve as a function of every cell in your body, in particular, the neurons, which are the nerve cells in our brain. Now, I've talked about this many times before on the podcast. The neurons require adequate sodium and potassium, as well as magnesium, in order to fire action potentials, which are the electrical signals that allow neurons to do everything from generate focus and attention, things that, you know, such as allowing you to learn and generate neuromuscular junction connections, allowing you to exercise and train. You need adequate amounts of electrolytes in your brain in order to function properly. Now, we lose electrolytes when we sweat or even when we just do daily tasks. But when you go to the gym and you sweat, you're not just sweating out water, you're sweating out magnesium, potassium, selenium, sodium. These are critical nutrients for your brain. So, in turn, if you are struggling to meet your hydration needs, you might want to look at Element, spelled L-M-N-T. Even if you sit in a sauna all day, you are sweating out electrolytes. You need to be replacing them. So I take Element, the little sachets, about 2 to 3 times a day, typically once in the morning and again after or during my bout of exercise each day. And sometimes an additional one at night. They have these new chocolate flavored ones that I'm obsessed with. So if you want to grab some Element, they're giving our community a free box of Element every time you purchase one. Just go to Element, that is lmnt.com/neuro to claim your free box. That is element.com/neuro to claim your free box. The link is below in the show notes. This episode is also brought to you by HVMN. I often refer to it as nature's superfuel, and recently the Times has actually called it the drink of dreams. So I want to talk to you about Ketone IQ by HVMN. They are drinkable ketones. And it's a daily ketone supplement drink that delivers hours of unparalleled, clean, on-demand energy for superior physical and cognitive performance. Many of you know that I go nonstop for several hours each day, so I need to ensure that my brain is adequately fueled so I can push further for longer. And that's why I take Ketone IQ from morning to about the late afternoon. And I have to tell you, if you are one of those people who hates that afternoon slump in their performance, then you want to check this drink out. And lucky for us, Ketone IQ, or HVMN, is actually giving my community 20% off. Just head to hvmn.com/neuro. You can enter code neuro20 at checkout. That is hvmn.com/neuro, or just head over to HVMN website and enter code neuro20 at checkout. Mike Mutzel, how are you?
Doing wonderful. How are you, Louisa?
Mike Mutzel, why don't you give a brief introduction into your background and I guess tell everybody how we met?
Yeah, Louisa, thank you so much for having me on. So the long and short of my background is I have an undergraduate degree in biology and then a master's degree in nutrition. I landed in this space serendipitously by getting a job as a sales rep, actually, for a professional use dietary supplement company back in 2006, and have had the good fortune of meeting so many amazing practitioners along the way. Got introduced to functional medicine, IFM, and did various seminars and things like that, and have just improved my own health with sort of non-conventional modalities, fasting, cold baths, sauna therapy, you know, nutritional ketosis, all sorts of different things like that. So that's sort of the condensed version. And we met through Instagram and filmed a great podcast in your apartment there in Manhattan. And so I'm excited to share all sorts of different tactics that I've used over the years to just enhance my own mental performance, mood, memory, cognition, all of that. I mean, there's just so many different things, from mouth taping to fasted exercise. I mean, there's just so many tools that we have access to nowadays that really can move the needle and the pendulum and enhance cognition. So it's exciting.
Yeah. And what everybody should know is that I've been an avid follower of yours for a number of years. So when we connected, I was just so happy because I learned so much from you. You have a really amazing YouTube, and you should know that everything is, I find as though that you put everything as in science first, opinion second. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, you know, because when you watch mainstream television networks and so forth, it seems that no matter which political spectrum it's landing on in terms of the outlet, there is a bias there. And what I'd like to do is just share the actual facts and then let people interpret that as they may. But I often will talk about my own biases and talk about how this paper or this study, for example, challenged my previously held beliefs about a certain topic. So I think that's important because humans are inherently irrational. You know, there's a book behind me somewhere called Predictably Irrational, about how the human mind is susceptible to biases, cognitive biases, and so forth. And so a lot of people are seeking out to confirm what they think to be true. And so I think it's really good. Anytime we learn about a new topic or a new set of ideas, have an open mind and be willing to challenge that bias, because that's how we learn and grow. So I think that's quite interesting to be aware of that. And so there's often conflicting data when it comes to whether it's exercise or fasting or calories in, calories out versus the carbohydrate insulin model of obesity. And so I think it is good to approach these topics with an open mind.
Yeah. And actually, one area of very conflicting evidence has been in this certain supplement that we are going to speak of today. So I'm dedicating this entire episode, guys, to creatine. Lately, I've been researching a lot about creatine because no longer is it, you know, known for just the body benefits. You know, many people were taking creatine over the last 10, 20 years to improve athletic performance, improve bodybuilding performance and muscle mass. But now we have substantial evidence to show the effects of creatine on the brain. And in fact, a lot of our listeners know, and you do too, Mike, my dad back in 2019 had a stroke, and Now the research is coming out with post-stroke patients and creatine supplementation, which I think is absolutely fantastic. So you've done a lot of, you know, videos and research in this area. So why don't we break it down? Why don't you break it down? Like, what is creatine first and foremost?
Yeah, Louisa, great question. First of all, there's so many myths about creatine. Creatine causes kidney failure. People say creatine causes hair loss. Creatine impacts androgens. You know, creatine is just involved in the resynthesis of creating cellular energy that many people know to be as ATP. So if we just back up a little bit, if we eat food, we eat eggs or avocados or a steak or chicken or potatoes, right? That we can't directly process the macronutrients in those food sources to make cellular energy. It needs to be broken down within our cells, within the mitochondria, through two different mechanisms that we'll talk about, glycolysis and then the Krebs cycle, to make ATP. That's a cellular currency that your brain uses to interpret the information that we're talking about. That's the same cellular energy that finances the muscular contractions during exercise. What turns out that creatine is just involved in this rephosphorylation of ATP. And essentially what that means is, if people are watching on the video, I'm moving my bicep. My myocytes are doing is they're using ATP, that's high energy captured in this phosphate group on adenosine triphosphate known as ATP. And it's using that phosphate to make the muscles contract. And then it forms as a result or a consequence of financing this energetic reaction, it makes ADP. And so what creatine does is just re-helps to, it's just a sort of a buffer for the phosphate group there. So it's just helping in cellular energy production, specifically in context within the brain. The microglial cells use a lot of creatine. They're very energetically demanding. And muscle cells are under intense exercise sessions, or when there is a dearth of oxygen, when you're doing a sprint, when you're running, when you're weightlifting, when you're doing, say, CrossFit type explosive exercises where there's a buildup of lactate in the muscle, you start to feel that little burn. That's where creatine is involved, very intimately involved there in helping to pass on these phosphate groups to remake cellular energy. And I know those details might be sort of non-significant for most people, but it's important to recognize that this is how creatine is working. It's not improving androgens. It's not selectively damaging the kidneys. It's literally helping with cellular energy production when there's a high demand for energy. For example, in the brain, like I mentioned, the microglial cells and other cells that are very supportive to the entire central nervous system, and also in the muscle cells. And also, you mentioned cerebrovascular, a stroke, unfortunately, your father had. But in the heart as well, the heart is a muscle. And so the beating heart, especially during intense exercise sessions and bouts, the heart, the myocytes leverage creatine to help the cardiomyocytes create cellular energy. So that's essentially what it's doing. So it's giving you just a little bit of, so the benefits here for the average person trying to improve strength and prevent age-related muscle loss or sarcopenia is creatine can just be a tool to help you get a little bit more mileage out of your exercise sessions. That's essentially sort of the benefit there, because we all know we start to lose strength, in our 40s and 50s, and maybe our muscles don't have the same tone that they once had. And so, that can be defeating. I think, when people go to the gym, they're like, well, I'm not getting the benefits. Do I really need to continue this workout stuff? I know it's good for me, but I'm not seeing the results. And using an ergogenic aid like creatine can help with that, just for the mental aspect of it. So you feel like you're having iterative progress from your exercise session. So that is essentially what creatine does.
So let me just backtrack a bit. So it's involved in cellular energy production. Now, is it? Let's just reconfirm. It's already naturally produced in our muscles and in our cells.
Exactly, and this is a natural. We're getting this in our diet, and also our liver makes creatine as well. And I think the kidneys make a small amount. There is some sort of recycling in the kidneys, but yeah, your liver is responsible for making this. And so it's an amino acid. I can't remember. There's a nitrogen component. Then I can't remember the three or four different amino acids that are brought together to create this molecule known as creatine. But this is naturally occurring. You get it from the diet. And then you can also supplement this around exercise to kind of create higher levels to increase the concentration for acute situations such as a workout session.
But, you know, some people might say, well, why do I have to supplement with it? But so with many things, as we age, we get a depletion in many minerals. And obviously, everybody knows that at the age of 30, our brain starts to atrophy. It's very hard to gain muscle and strength, you know, as we age. Is that the same with creatine? Does the storage of creatine start to diminish as we get older?
Louisa, this is a great question. I don't know the answer to this, but I will say that the predominant dietary sources of creatine will come from more red meat. So from lamb, bison, buffalo, cattle, beef. And I think a lot of people are influenced by media and sort of the push to have more of a plant-based diet. And plants just have a different way of creating cellular energy with their chloroplasts and so forth. And so plants contain zero creatine. So for vegans, vegetarians, people eating a lot of chicken, eating a lot of tilapia and white fish, you're just not getting the dietary sources of creatine. And so therefore, you know, you may not have sufficient levels. So I don't know if there's an age-independent effect on the synthesis and whatnot, but I think it is really more related to the composition of one's diet. So if you're not eating red meat, and I know there's a lot of people are scared of eating red meat because of the cholesterol or the saturated fat that is contained in beef, bison, lamb, and things like that. But studies unequivocally show that those sources are going to be the best dietary sources of creatine. So the people that might be more susceptible to having a deficiency of creatine would be folks that have been on a vegan or vegetarian diet and or for whatever reason do not eat a lot of red meat. I know there's a lot of protein in chicken. Right behind my camera, I have about 15 chickens in my backyard. So I love chickens. I have eggs all the time. But chicken and turkey is just not a good source of creatine. You know, if you don't like red meat or whatever reason, then you might be an individual who would benefit from supplementing with creatine. So that's, I think, the considerations there.
Yeah. But look, it's also important, like, for everybody to understand that you don't just have to be a vegan. If, you know, I'm not a vegan and I eat red meat, I eat white meat, I eat vegetables, fruits, but I'm also supplementing with creatine. I'm having 5 grams a day and I'm having this 5 days a week. And that's not because of anything. I'm not doing it. I'm only really working out at the gym 5 days a week. And the other 2 days, I'm maybe doing a great walk outside or something. So it's also important to know that just because you are getting it in your diet, you can also supplement with it, right?
Exactly right. Yeah. And there's really no downside in terms of side effects and it's really pretty affordable as well, creatine monohydrate. And there's other forms of creatine we can dive into. But yeah, I think that's a great strategy. And using this as an ergogenic aid around exercise on days that you're doing more of these explosive type movements, just to increase the pool of creatine. And like I said, I mean, some people might notice a little water retention because creatine is involved in cellular hydration. There's an intimate connection at the molecular level with electrolytes like chloride and sodium and magnesium and potassium involved in the cellular uptake of creatine. So pairing these two together around exercise, and by these two, I mean electrolytes and creatine, studies have actually shown greater strength improvements in muscular performance and so forth. But I think just using it on days where you're exercising, just like, you know, on a rest day, on a Sunday, I'm not having a bunch of caffeine while I'm sitting around reading books or something, but maybe before I do a hard workout, I'm going to have an extra espresso. So you think about it in that context.
Yeah. So you've worked with men, you've worked with women, you've interviewed so many different people. Do you find like there is a myth around taking creatine? Like you said, some people feel bloated. I think in my position as a woman, what I hear a lot of in my inner circle is I'm not taking creatine, A, because I don't want to get bulky, I don't want to bloat. And then there's now so many people messaging me saying, but Louisa, I'm too scared of taking creatine because I'm scared my hair is going to fall out. Do you find that these are these myths or are these true?
Louisa, it's a great question. You know, I want to believe people's anecdotes because that's where we learn. But I also realize that, like we talked about when we did this introduction, the human mind is really irrational. And if you hear something about it almost, you hear it repetitively, it becomes truth to some people, and they really believe these different things. And so mechanistically, it makes no sense to me. I could be proven wrong here, and I'm totally open to this, that it makes no sense that using an ergogenic aid that improves cellular energy production would somehow exacerbate hair loss. We know that hair loss is, it's multifactorial, but we know that dihydrotestosterone, DHT, is involved in sort of affecting the follicles of the hair. And so that would suggest that somehow creatine is improving testosterone and increasing the conversion of testosterone to DHT and causing hair loss. Like I said, it's multifactorial, but that's one aspect of it. I don't know how something that improves cellular energy production would then increase DHT and cause hair loss. If anything, I would suspect that creatine would help with hair and nails and these tissues that are energetically demanding. I would suspect that it would improve the function of these cells and not cause detrimental aspects there. But I think one way that potentially creatine might cause hair loss is you have an excellent workout and your body is having a compensatory increase in androgens to help you recover from that workout. And in so doing, potentially, and this would be a minority of individuals who take creatine, that it might worsen or accelerate pre-existing genetic predispositions towards hair loss. I mean, that, and I think that's a small subset of the population for which that would act. It'd be like a hyper responder type person where that would actually happen. So I really think there's just so many myths about creatine because, and let me just back up historically. I started taking creatine in 1999. When creatine first came on the market, bodybuilding.com and these different websites were selling this. It was creatine monohydrate paired with 5 parts dextrose or maltodextrin. So if you were taking 5 grams like you take, Louisa, which I think is a great dose for a lot of people, you were also getting, 50, 75 grams of dextrose, depending upon how much creatine you took. And so you're getting all this, very rapidly absorbed sugar that can cause issues, PCOS and insulin resistance. And we know that to be linked with hair loss and fertility issues and so forth. So I think maybe some of these myths started to arise because of the creatine products. There was this perception that creatine had to be paired with sugar. And so sometimes it was 10 grams of sugar per 1 part creatine. So I'm not sure where this myth came from, but here's the good news is there's been many randomized placebo-controlled studies, RCTs using creatine in women, in elderly subjects, in male athletes, strength athletes, endurance athletes. By now, it's arguably one of the most studied ergogenic aids that's out there. And the data is quite clear. It enhances muscular endurance. It enhances strength. It enhances one rep maximum output and so forth. So I really think it's important for people when they take any supplement. This is just as an aside. The placebo effect is very strong, and this is why in pharma, but we want to use this to our benefit. The mind is so powerful. If you have a belief that this thing is going to cause harm or will help you, it will probably do just that. I mean, there's an old adage, what you think you become. And this is so true with supplements. And I have a whole bunch of side stories I can share with you about how powerful the mind is when it comes to just taking magnesium, if you want to hear about that. But I think it's important that we sort of unlearn the myths and approach this with a blank slate.
Yeah, absolutely. I've told everybody that even I'm getting my parents to supplement with this. It's one of the safest. It is the safest supplement and the most widely studied, as you said. So you do a lot of research as well, to prepare for your podcast, to prepare for your YouTube. Has there been anything recently in the scientific literature that has grabbed your attention when it comes to creatine?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the most exciting thing about creatine that is emerging is how creatine can help with pregnancy and fertility and also helping.
What? Oh, I love this subject.
It's fascinating to me. I mean, if you think about growing a baby, talk about one of the most energetically demanding. I mean, the placenta and nourishing a growing human being, a lot of energy needs to be reallocated there. And so creatine, I think, is a wonderful tool to consider for moms and families trying to conceive. So that to me is most very exciting. Now, there's not a lot of human, you know, long duration RCTs using creatine and fertility outcomes and so forth. But there's just an emerging sort of trend in the literature where scientists are suggesting that the placenta, due to the energetic demands, really creatine could be a great tool for that. And then also the brain as well. The microglial cells and different cells within the brain, how creatine is involved with energy production there. So I think that to me is the most exciting, you know, preserving cognition and brain function, and also mood as well. We know that mood and affect and all that really is, unfortunately, there's a mental health crisis in the world. And so using these you know, carnonutrients as tools to help improve cognition. So that to me is the most, I mean, it's one thing to be muscular and strong in the gym, and that's great for metabolic health and longevity, but also supporting cognition and also a healthy offspring, I think, is equally important.
Yeah, it's interesting you said that, because I understand it from a brain mechanism, obviously. And when you talk about energy, I often just think straight to mitochondria. And we know that we have mitochondria in our cells, in our body, and also in our brain. And if they are depleted, which a lot of the time in cognitive decline and cognitive dysfunction, it usually happens in the frontal lobe, which is where a lot of our cognitive processes are beginning and where they live. But when you talk about fertility, it reminded me of a study that I've read when it comes to the ova and the mitochondria within there, that a lot of people with, you know, especially females, I should say, when they're having these fertility issues, one thing that they can be doing is looking at metabolism and looking at mitochondria and mitochondrial biogenesis. So that actually really makes sense. So I'm so happy that you mentioned that.
You know, these mitochondria, I know that in certain circles on the internet or pockets of health, we talk about the mitochondria, but they are so important. I just want to leave this message for folks is, if you look at tumor cells and cancer cells, and unfortunately, cancer is the second leading cause of death, at least here in the U.S. and North America, and presumably parts of Europe and Australia, there's one hallmark of cancer is dysfunctional mitochondria within the tumor cell. So it's very important that we focus and allocate our sort of health endeavors towards supporting mitochondrial health. And like you said, energy production, because when the cells lose their ability to create cellular energy, then there is all sorts of compensatory pathways that start to increase that can cause deranged metabolism and lead to dysfunction. And that dysfunction may look different. It could be cancer, it could be heart disease, it can be autoimmunity and all that. And so in my opinion, supporting mitochondrial health and energy production is like the number one thing that we should be focusing on. But yeah, the mitochondria and thinking about creatine as a tool that can support mitochondrial health and energy production within the mitochondria, I think is a great way to sort of reframe how to view it.
Well, there we have it. Let's end on dosages. I've mentioned my dosage, which is 5 grams a day. Do you believe in that preload? I know there's a preloading phase of creatine.
Yeah. You know, some people talk about that. There's been several studies that have looked at that where they will dose, say, 10 milligrams of, or I'm sorry, 10 grams of creatine monohydrate, for say 2 to 3 weeks or something, then go to a maintenance phase of 5 grams per day. I think for most people that are eating an omnivorous style diet, having red meat a couple times per week, I think it's fine just starting out at 5 grams per day. You know, the downside of using creatine monohydrate, for some people, it can cause gastric distress at those higher dosages. So I wouldn't want to deter people from perceiving creatine to be bad if they start to dose it high, then get GI distress, and they're worried mentally, like, oh my gosh, if I have this, am I going to get bloating or watery stools? Even some people find that just 2.5 grams of creatine is sufficient if they pair it around exercise. Now, this is the thing that I think a lot, you asked me about what are exciting trends. I don't even think we need to even dose 5 grams per day. some people, because skeletal muscle that's being exercised or utilized actually increases the absorption of creatine about 20 to 25%. So if you're dosing your creatine around exercise, such as before the workout or even intra-workout, you might not even have to go up to the 5 grams per day. And so a lot of people are noticing benefit just having like 2.5 grams or 2 grams around exercise. So I think that's the important thing is when you dose creatine, you don't want to have it on an empty stomach. You want to have it around exercise and or with food because insulin and some of these electrolytes help with the absorption. So
can you just take it without exercising? Like, let's just say I didn't go to the gym today. Can I take it today?
Oh, yeah, totally. But you might want to take it around a mealtime. And it gets because insulin is involved in the uptake of creatine through mechanisms I don't fully understand. And then also around exercise, the cells, there's a transport protein, this creatine chloride transporter, CRT. And that insulin helps with the expression of that. And then when your muscles are exercising, that transporter is more receptive to uptaking creatine. So that's just something to consider. So you may not want to take it just on fasted in the morning before you go to work, right? Sure, it's fine if you forget to take it around exercise, but it might be best absorbed around mealtime and then around exercise.
Wow, I'm so happy that you came onto the podcast and you were able to share your wisdom and your knowledge with us, Mike. Where can everybody find out more about you and your learnings?
Yeah, thank you, Louisa. And thanks, everyone, for listening and so forth. I put a lot of content on my YouTube channel called High Intensity Health, and my website is High Intensity Health as well. So if you found this helpful, you might like some of the content we produce there.
And I'll link it all below in the show notes. Mike, thank you for being part of the Neuro Experience podcast.
My pleasure. Thank you.